Welcome to the 71st episode of the Game 4 podcast. In this episode, we'll talk about the possible futures of the brick-and-mortar tabletop gaming store. I'm Adam.
And I'm Matt.
And this is the Game 4 podcast. Game 4 is a platform to help connect tabletop gamers and to help you get more out of your tabletop gaming. Matt and I are part of a software development and design company called Milk Can. And because most of the folks at Milk Can love tabletop games, we developed the Game 4 app and launched it in early 2018. We launched this companion podcast in June 2019 to help tabletop gamers get more enjoyment out of their hobby. Due to the COVID-19 global pandemic, we hibernated the Game 4 app in July of 2020 and plan to bring back a retooled version of the app for Android, iOS, and web when gaming in person is safer. Until then, we'll keep bringing you this podcast to help you get more out of your tabletop gaming. I think I read through that without any glitches this time. That's something.
Yay.
There Woo-hoo. You go. Indeed.
Look at you.
I know. Yeah, well, you know, it's 71 episodes in. We should hopefully start heading in there eventually. How are you?
Any episode now.
What's that?
I said any episode now.
Yeah, exactly. Anytime soon, that'd be great. How's your hobby been going? You got any hobby things done?
Not as much as I want. I've thought about hobbying a lot, but, you know, I've been kind of busy. Real work is... kept me fairly busy. We're trying to get a release out for FDA clearance, so I've spent many a time doing most of that. But I did get a little bit more painting on my Black Orcs for Blood Bowl. That's the words I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
I did get my new air paint in from Army Painter. Mm-hmm. I didn't order the like mega set, but I did this next level down, the triads and all that stuff. But
yeah, the triads are really nice, actually. That's really nice for when you're airbrushing stuff, because you've got this kind of lower color and like what they call, I think, a base and then a
base,
mid, and then a high.
Yep.
Yeah. That's really nice.
Yeah. So, no, I'm looking forward to that. Got a couple of nice cases off of the Amazons that they fit in very nicely. So they are ready to go. And they came with the balls already, like the mixing balls already in them, which was nice. Because the skin tones and the metallics, they came with the balls, but you had to like open each one up and put them in. So this was nice. Mm-hmm. They're already pre-added.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did that. And then been getting a lot more 3D prints going and out the door. So that's nice.
Yeah.
I've got one more that's giving me trouble with yours, but other than that is done.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's me. How about you?
Well, I've been working on the Skaven, the Skaven Warband that I've been doing for a while now on Twitch, the rats indeed. And I'm doing them for Warcry. So at this point I've got 11 finished clan rats, which are the normal troops. I did finish the leader, who's known as the Grey Seer. He's done. And then I have a Warlock Engineer who Monday night I just finished his base on stream. Like, I don't normally paint bases on stream, but I was doing other stuff, so I did that. Okay. Finished that up, and then so he's all done. And then I've been also working on this, it's called a warp fire thrower, but it's actually two rats on a single base. One guy's got like a big tank on his back, and then there's a hose that goes to a nozzle, and the guy in the front, he gets to shoot out the warp fire or whatever.
Nice.
And so they're I would say two-thirds done. I'm pretty close to, you know. But then the last model in that group is called a Storm Fiend, who is this humongous kind of like weird robot rat and everything like that. So he's built and primed and ready to go, but I haven't even laid the first lick of regular paint on him yet. So I'm going to get that started after I get this Warpfire guy done. So
nice.
Still got some more streams full of Skaven. And then after that, I'm probably going to go into those Khorne Bloodbound guys for Warcry as well. So been keeping busy with that. Off stream, I've been working on some models that I am working on for a different project, and I've been texturing their bases. They're 3D prints that I got off of Etsy. And but they're, you know, they didn't come with bases. Well, some of them came with bases, but other ones didn't. So I had to kind of go through and mess with them. And I'm just adding some kind of like just simple texture. I'm not making them look like they're standing outside. I'm trying to make them a little bit more like they're standing in, you know, like a sci-fi type environment or something like that. Maybe okay. a little bit, but I don't know. We'll see how it, the thing is that some of the bases, because they're already molded and they're like, I don't know if they're supposed to be like spaceship deck or whatever, but they're very sci-fi looking. And then the other bases I'm making, I would say less sci-fi looking. So I don't know. We'll see how they match. It's okay. not super important, but I would like them to match. And then I also cleaned some of the basement with the help of my lovely wife. We cleaned out kind of one corner relatively well. Found a bunch of old crazy stuff that was left behind by her grandparents because we bought the house from her grandparents. So that's kind of fun as well. But yeah, that's pretty much about it as far as that's concerned. Yeah, it's been not too bad. So can you hear the cat meowing?
Yep. I thought it was a kid at first.
No, it's Carlson. I don't know what he's going on about. Carlson, simmer down. Go take a nap. I don't know what he's doing. He was in a fight with his sister for a bit there, too. I don't know what that's all about. All right.
Silly cats.
Carlson. What are you doing? Here, go. Okay. All right. Great. All right. So what have we got going on otherwise with the app and all kinds of stuff like that? We are soon to be going to Reno.
Yes. Reno, Nevada.
For
the Gamma Trade Show.
Game Manufacturers Association. I don't know why that first A is in there. It should be the GMA. It's driven me nuts for years. But yeah, so it's the Game Manufacturers Association, spelled G-A-M-A. Their trade show, yes. The Reno, the Gamma Expo is what's the specific name for it. How many times have we gone? Is this our fourth?
It's at least the fourth.
Really? Well, we went 2018. Did we go 2018? Yes, we went 2018, and then 2019, and then 2020. Right.
Pandemic.
There was no 2021. Yeah, this would be a fourth. Yep. Cool.
Okay. So 5 years.
So we've got a booth. 144 is our booth number.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, I think so. We're across the aisle from Battlephone, and just down a little ways from TurboDork. And so that'll be good. We'll be there. The convention is actually March 14th to the 18th. So we'll have to try to make sure that we don't have a podcast that's supposed to be coming out that week.
Yeah, I think we checked that we don't, or maybe we did. We said we would record Monday because we don't leave till late that day. But
that's true. Yeah. It'll be fine. But we just got to make sure we get our stuff together. But yeah, so that's going on, and we will be talking to publishers, we'll be talking to store owners and all kinds of different things like that. That's why you go to this convention. And industry
people.
Exactly, industry folks. Because we're not only looking towards, you know, obviously bringing back the Game 4 podcast, we already have the Game 4 podcast, the Game 4 app, we're looking at bringing that back hopefully in the summer. But we're also, you know, we've been doing work with different tabletop gaming companies like Battlefoam, like I mentioned, companies like Renegade Studios, companies like The Op, and things like that. So, been doing websites and companion apps and all kinds of stuff. So,
hopefully grow that.
It'll be weird to go back because we haven't been there. Like last time we were there, it was like the pandemic was just like people were just hearing about COVID because it was like we literally got back next week was when lockdown started.
Lockdown kind of started as we were going back.
Was it?
Yeah. NHL was canceled like halfway through the
show. I think we worked in the office like another week.
Schools were closed. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It was like,
because I remember we flew back on what's it called? Friday the 13th. It was Friday the 13th of March. Because I remember, oh, good, we're flying on Friday the 13th. Great. So I do remember that. But yeah. And there wasn't one. So now we'll be back, but there'll be masks and all that kind of stuff and everything. So it'll be a different thing. But it's still in the same location, still in Reno.
Restrictions might lift by then. I saw that a bunch of them are starting to lift. Like the UK just lifted all theirs today or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Yeah, I know. I think that I did read somewhere that, and I don't know, one of the posts they were talking about, like, it's going to be a situation where, you know, you still need to wear masks because the resort says so, but that may change, or, you know, so it's constantly right. in flux. We see that. Like, Lord knows, if you look at the charts for cases and stuff, they've been plummeting, which is great. It's a great direction to be going, you know, so we'll see. But let's hope. But yeah, so it's going to be nice to see people we haven't seen in a couple of years, you know?
Yeah.
That'll be really great.
Yeah, we'll be talking the Game 4 Library Manager, which is new.
Yep.
The new 2.0 version, which we're working on.
Game 4.
Yeah, we've got our survey that should be posted by the time this goes live.
Yeah, we mentioned that survey last episode that we wanted to get people's opinions on stuff and things like that. And so that'll be live. It's in the show notes. Or if you're listening to this on YouTube, it'll be in the description. We'll also post it on social and stuff like that, or like our Facebook and our Twitter. But yeah, so if you get the chance, definitely fill out the survey. It's not crazy long. It's, you know, it's not like super, super short, but it's, I don't know, what is it? Something like, I don't think, maybe a dozen question max.
Yeah, it depends on, there's like, yeah, depending on what you answer and how you answer, there's a couple of questions that you have to answer or not to answer.
There's
there's a question
where, like, if you say, yes, I have gone to local conventions, then we'll ask you some questions about that. But if you say, no, I never have, well, then it'll skip those questions. So it's variable length that way.
Yeah.
So,
and hopefully that helps. Yeah, it's mainly questions that we've asked ourselves as we've been designing stuff, and stuff that we've had people ask us. As far as advertisers and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That is it.
So that'll be cool. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, we might give a little bit more details in some of our meetings while we're there about the new Game 4 product coming this summer, too. So,
Yeah, absolutely. So things are moving along. Absolutely. So today's topic, we're talking about brick and mortar gaming stores and what their future looks like. We had a commenter
on the cloud.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, on the blockchain. God, no. Yes. We had a commenter ask about, you know, like, oh, well, what about, like, talking about, you know, what game stores will look like in the, and it was like 10 years from now or 15 years from now or something like that. And we were like, well, I mean, that's very specific, but the concept of what the future holds for tabletop gaming stores or what tabletop gaming stores will look like in the future, your FLGS, your friendly local game store, that actually seemed kind of interesting. So we've kind of done a bit of research and read some different threads in different places and kind of came up with some concepts and whatnot. And it's not so much it's going to be kind of straddling the line. We're going to talk about things that stores need to do to stay in business, aka be in business in the future, you know what I mean?
Right.
But we're also going to talk a little bit about different things, different features, whatever, that kind of stuff, that could be also you know, things that you're going to find
moving sidewalks through the store.
Well, I mean, it's not going to be one piece jumpsuits made out of silver material and teleporters. Maybe in the far, far future, but that's, unfortunately, I'm not thinking Star Trek. I'm thinking just, you know.
Okay.
We're
not like the year 2000.
Right, exactly. The future, Conan. Right. So, yeah. So brick and mortar stores that in the future, well, one thing that they probably did to get there is keep surviving through, you know, against, you know, online sales, crowdfunding stuff and things like that that crop up, which a lot of store owners and things like that look at as being, you know, obviously troublesome, which we get. Things change and, you know, you have to be able to adapt with those things. But it might also not be stores that are open now. It might be stores that open in the future. You know, there are people that will tell you, I don't know if you should open a store these days, but there are other people that will tell you now's a great time to open a store. But it kind of depends on, I guess, on how you as the store owner, maybe the store manager, that kind of stuff, like how, you know, like what kind of ideas you have for, you know, what's going to go on in your store.
Your SWOT analysis, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Getting into that's the thing. And we've talked to this about this a bunch of times. There are a lot of store owners who are not business people. And that is troublesome. You know, that makes it hard. And then there are store owners that are, you know, they're gamers as well, just like those ones that aren't necessarily business people, but they also have a decent mind for business. And they are the ones that have a tendency to do well generally and expand and all kinds of stuff like that. But, you know, in the past, it was, a lot easier, I think, for a store owner to not be a business person because, well, where else is the person going to get their games?
Yeah, you just hang up your shingle and everybody comes to your store to buy their Magic cards.
Exactly, exactly. And now that's not exactly the case. So I think one of the things that your stores in the future that are successful, the ones that still keep surviving, one of the things they're first or foremost, they're going to keep their customer base engaged and involved. Mm-hmm. You know, it comes down to a situation if you want to buy a game, like we were just saying, you don't have to go to a game store to do it. You could go online. But there's a lot of things the game store can provide that the onlines can't. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So the stores in the future are going to have to keep their customer base engaged and involved. And one of the ways, well, many of the ways that you do something like that, having a decent inventory of popular games. Now, if you have the ability to have popular and I don't want to say unpopular games, because that doesn't make any sense. Why would I want to buy unpopular games?
More niche but like, games.
Yeah, exactly. You get your popular normal stuff, your Catans, your Carcassones, your Tickets to Rides, all that kind of stuff. You could, you know, you obviously you want to have those things in stock. So when someone comes in and is like, oh, I keep hearing about the Settlers of Catan, you'd be like, well, there you go. You know, you obviously want that. And there's a lot of ways that as a store owner, you know, you can take a look at, you know, the BGG top or Hot 100 or whatever it's called, you know, the hot list or, you know, there's a lot of things where you can know very easily, oh, this is actually a lot of people are interested in this. Maybe I should carry a copy or two of this in my store, depending on the size of your store and how it goes. You know, and so that's something to really keep an eye on. But then also sometimes the niche stuff is also, you know, important as well. But obviously you can't carry all the niche stuff because Lord knows what, how many is it something like, I think that I read an article about 200,000 new board games come out every day, something like that. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, that's way down from what I've heard.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, that's yeah. It's, I mean, there's a lot of new games that come out every single day. And we've talked about this in the past about because it's so much simpler to produce certain types of games, you know, RPGs that basically are a book or a PDF. There's lots and lots of options for that. Same thing for, you know, miniatures games where you're basically just selling a book maybe and some STLs or whatever. Like there's all these different things. So, publication has gotten easier, so therefore there's a lot more stuff out there, and so therefore there's potentially a lot more stuff for you to have to carry in your store. So I think balancing a good store owner can understand the balance between the popular games and maybe the more niche stuff, and it also sometimes depends on your area, you know.
Right. Or just even if they just make it really easy to request something to be ordered in. I know that like my local game store doesn't have everything, but if I ask them, like they'll usually try to get in pretty quickly and then just let me know. So,
yeah, it a lot of things that I was reading, like I was doing some reading of some different, like, you know, like Reddit threads and stuff like that, which are not necessarily always the rosiest of places. But there were people saying, you know, like if I go into my local store and I go, hey, I I'd like to buy this. And they're like, well, we can order it. The current response from the people, like at least in your head, hopefully you don't say this directly to the store owner, is like, well, yeah, so can I. I can also order it. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's difficult. But obviously you also can't keep everything in stock either. So
right. Or they might give you like, they're like, oh, but we can give you, you know, like, you know, if they have like your buyer discount or pre-order discounts or stuff like that, then.
So there is a definite benefit. If like every time you go into the store to buy something, it's something that they don't have and they're going to keep, they have to like order it. Well, then that's maybe a problem on their end or something. Maybe they're focusing too much on the niche and not enough on the popular, or who knows, or you're just asking for some really, you know, odd stuff. But, you know, if it comes down to a situation of you being able to buy it online or you being able to buy it from your local store, which you like to go to and you want them to stay open, and also they maybe have like a loyalty rewards program or something like that, which we'll mention later on, then, you know, that's a benefit. But the big important thing of keeping, you know, the customers in this situation, you know, involved and interested and engaged is obviously like a decent inventory. If they come in there to not buy stuff, well, or if they come in there to try to buy stuff and they can't, that's going to be a problem. Beyond that, then we're going to start talking about things like, you know, large, clean, uncluttered gaming areas for all different types of games. Sometimes you'll have a store that's just a Magic store. That's what they'll, you know, you everyone kind of just is like, well, yeah, they sell this and that and the other thing and whatever, but it's basically just a Magic store. And if you go there to play Magic, you're happy as a clam, right? But the other folks who might be interested in trying to, like, you know, go to the store, maybe not so much. So, the bigger stores that I've been to in the past that have been popular, you know, obviously successful stores, do have a big gaming area that is available for not just, you know, your collectible card game stuff, but also maybe they'll have like those little kind of side rooms even sometimes for RPGs, you know. And the whole reason, you know, because the point is always like, well, I could just play these games at home. Why do I need to go to the store? Well, because sometimes, and this is a big benefit of the game store, a popular, you know, like a successful game store, especially in the future, is that you know, this is a place I can go and play games with folks that maybe I kind of know from online, or maybe I kind of met there, or maybe even I met them at the store. But, and we talked about this a bunch with the Game4 app, you know, when you're going to get together and meet somebody from the Looking for Players section, it's a good idea to meet them at the game store because it's a public place and it's safe. And you may make a new friend, but you may not necessarily want these folks over to your house right away or whatever. So being able to have a place you can go, you know what I mean?
Yeah, neutral spot or, you know, like, you know, I know that back in the day when I had young kids and early bedtimes, you know, if I wanted to play past 6 o'clock at night, it was nice to have someplace else to game. That was quiet and not, you don't get as many distractions. You don't have dogs and cats running about and
indeed
allergies.
Sure. Oh yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. We've got cats. So if you were to come over to our house and if you're allergic to cats, well then that's, hopefully you can take a pill or something. I mean, I'm allergic to cats, so I have to take a pill, but yeah. So it's one of those deals where it's, like having a neutral kind of place that's centrally located or not, depends on where you're coming from, but also like depending on the game too, like sometimes you need, terrain and stuff like that. And maybe the store's got a good, you know, supply of that kind of stuff for your
space,
you know, miniatures or game or whatever.
Or try out new games. Yep.
Well, that's the thing too, is that also like a game library area, you know, or a game library of whatever kind, like a lot of stores now are having demo copies of games. So you could come in and try out a game that maybe you're going to end up buying or something like that. You know what I mean? We've also, you and I think both have talked to, I mean, I interviewed her, I remember back in the early days of Game4, but there's a woman that runs a store in Sheboygan or Manitowoc. I can't ever remember. Her name is Lynn, I believe. Anyway, she came up with this whole kind of concept of game rental. So, you know, you come into the store, you say, I would like to rent this game. And then you take it home and you play it for a bit or whatever, and then you can bring it back and purchase it if you want to. And she had this whole sort of kind of system for something like that, which makes a ton of sense. It's a really great, you know, because it's a try before you buy kind of situation, which, because there's so many different board games out there, sure, you can go online, you can watch some maybe, you know, reviews or listen to a podcast about it or something like that. But it is a situation where it's not a bad idea to maybe take this home and try it and keep it for a while. And then maybe it's not right for our family or my group of friends or whatever. So then you can return it, you know, and again, it's a rental situation. And then the next person can come by and rent it later on. And eventually somebody buys it. I believe it was at a discount. That was part of the deal. But that, like having a system like that, really makes your store much more attractive than buying online, you know?
Yeah.
Let's see here. What else have we got? Well, I mean, gaming events. We pushed pretty hard, obviously, on gaming events with Game4. That's a big portion of the idea behind it. And stores that have gaming events and schedule things, whether it's, you know, beyond just like Friday Night Magic or whatever, that kind of stuff, those are the stores that get more people, you know, more butts in seats, frankly, you know. And that's, it's a bunch of work. I mean, it is, you know, you're... Like, what do you think the percentage is? And I don't have the answer here. Both of us would be guessing. What do you think the percentage is out there of friendly local game stores that have literally one employee and it's the owner? I feel like it's probably at least 50%.
You really think it's still that? I don't.
Really?
I was gonna go like 10%. Like, I think it's gone way down.
Well, I mean, the smaller stores are all basically that way for the most part. I think still, I mean, like every once in a while you might get a store that's got like an owner and one employee, but very frequently the bigger, more successful stores, you and I know this just from the stores in our local area, they do have multiple employees and managers and stuff like that. Yeah. But I think that especially with the smaller stores out there, there's still a lot of them where it's a one person show, maybe two. And when you've got to be the person who orders the games and stocks the games and also cleans the bathroom and also tries to set up all the events and stuff like that, it's pretty tough, you know?
Order inventory,
all that.
Speak to people,
Restock the snacks, you know? So it's a, in my opinion, going forward specifically, if you want to be able to compete as a store against the online folks, being the place where I can sit and play these events, you can buy a bunch of cool miniatures and stuff like that from some online retailer. But if you want to then sit down and play, you either need to get people to come over to your house or go over to their house. So hopefully you have friends that play the game. But if you don't, then you need to go find somebody who's running the game event or something like that at a local shop, whether it's a tournament, whether it's just a casual play night or whatever, like that type of thing. And it's the same with, board games. You get your family involved, depending on what your family's particular, interest is in board games. But, other people are kind of important in this hobby, and the game store is really still the hub. Amazon is not, so that's really kind of the important thing, I think, as far as the future is concerned for stores that want to keep going in the future, is that they have to move towards their strengths. You know what I mean?
Yep,
let's see here. So then also we've got, we mentioned the game library. That's also important. Another, I think, important thing that you don't see too much from, you don't see it from online places other than, say, like eBay, is used games. Store owner that we know from the Wisconsin area has given a bunch of seminars at a bunch of different events. I think Reno, he's done it at the thing we're going to in a couple of weeks, and also at other events we've been at, like the distributor conference that we went to in Madison a couple of times. He's given this talk about how to sell used games at your store and how to make it as easy and like low impact as possible. Basically you need a little bit of time and you need a shrink wrap machine, and that's about it. And he has like it all laid out, and it's like a free PDF that you can get from him or whatever, and all that kind of stuff. His name is Brian. I forget his last name, but he's from a game store. Actually, I think they have a couple now. Maybe. Yeah, it might be Winters. Brian Winters. That sounds right. Yeah. But it's a game store called I'm Bored, and it's in Madison area, Wisconsin. It's not in Madison proper, I don't think. I don't remember exactly, but yeah. Mm-hmm. And so and I was in one of those seminars, and I could tell all of the retailers that were in that seminar were all like, oh, this is, and we're like writing down a lot of notes because they were like, oh, this would be useful. And it's a concept of basically you bringing in a game that you're not interested in anymore. And then you go through and, okay, it looks like all the parts are here and all this kind of stuff. And then we shrink wrap it, and then you get store credit, and then people come and buy it, and you have a little section, and this is where the used games go and all that kind of stuff. And he had like ideas on how long they get to sit there and this, all this different stuff. And, that kind of thing, like being able to go and buy a game that you've been interested in for a while, but you don't necessarily want to pay full price, buying a used version of it, especially with board games, when so many people have so many board games, and they maybe play them a couple of times, which we've talked about also here on the podcast in the past. I think that's also super important. Again, the one downside, I think, for a lot of these ideas is that they do take time. And like I said, in a lot of the situations, the store owner may not have the time, but they need to figure out how to find that time to really make it so that they can still compete against the online, because the online has got, discounts and, generally always in stock and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's it is kind of tough.
Right. Yeah. So I think, the thing is that brick and mortar stores, need to have some, besides catering, they definitely have to have a reason to pick them over online ordering. I mean, online ordering, like right now, it's freezing outside, the wind's blowing.
Yeah.
It's really tempting for me just to order online and have someone deliver to me, my stuff, versus going out into the cold.
Right. But convenience of being able to, like, if you're painting something, you know, or, mm-hmm. you know, or you need new dice for whatever reason. I mean, sometimes you just need new dice, and the ability to go to the store, grab it and come back and be right, you know, back on track right away is super nice. 2 days free shipping is great in some situations. But then sometimes, like I said, if it's a Saturday afternoon and you're working on a model, for example, and you run out of white paint or glue or whatever,
right.
you know, it's really convenient to be able to hop to the store, grab something mm-hmm. and come back. So yeah, that's one of the big benefits of stores and the convenience, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's been many times where rundown is a lot nicer than having to like stop everything and wait 2 days and then mm-hmm. hope that you get the right thing. Being able to actually like see it too. There's some times where I'm like, I don't know, ordering paint online is still not like sets maybe, but ordering a specific like one color.
Yeah, if you're trying to match something, especially.
Yeah. Or just kind of go like, oh, is that the kind of tone I want? Or I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't disagree. Like, again, if you're ordering like a set of paints where you know you're going to get a bunch of stuff, that's a different story maybe. But yeah, definitely. It's a situation where you're like, well, you know, this I need a one color that matches this other color or gets close or something like that. And that is very convenient. And other benefits I think that the stores need as well, besides just straight up convenience, which is a big benefit in my opinion, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily a benefit, but having, you know, they need to keep the store clean and organized and the bathrooms clean and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, good lighting too. Like,
yeah, I know that's true.
If you can't really see, or you have kind of like, not even like the, like old man squint, but just like, you're like, mm-hmm. oh, it's like, everything's kind of like a weird yellow. And when I get home, everything looks completely different. That doesn't help, but nice bright colors. I know like one of our local stores, they just redid some of their shelving that gave, you know, stuff more room and mm-hmm. it's easier to kind of pick stuff out versus, you know, kind of more of the old traditional shelves.
Like the old kind of game store that just seems like a club that people sort of kind of hang out at, you know, and, mm-hmm. and it's sort of a kind of a bit of a mess or whatever, like that's, you're seeing less and less of that. Because that's, you know, people are, you know, it used to be that, well, I want to buy a game and they're the only game in town. Well, they're not anymore. And that's the thing. So the benefits of convenience, cleanliness, nice lighting, good place to mm-hmm. play, all that kind of stuff, knowledgeable staff.
Oh,
like that's also super helpful.
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Being able to ask questions, you know, mm-hmm. even if they don't know exactly, like usually, like, you know, sometimes they'll have more than one staff member and they each kind of have their own specialty mm-hmm. or they'll, you know, maybe look it up for you, like as far as like asking somebody else or, you know, or they might just go, well, you know, I haven't used that specific line, but here's what I'm hearing from other customers, you know. Yeah, we're selling a lot of that lately, you know, so.
It's just really helpful to be able to like walk into a store and be like, so I've got a gaming group that's like five people and we're looking for co-op games because if we have adversarial games, somebody gets angry. And so we always need to play co-op stuff. And then having the store owner
still in the hospital.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But having like the store owner or the employee or whatever go, oh, yeah, well, you know, have you looked at this one and this one and this one? Like that kind of stuff mm-hmm. is really helpful because, again, like the online places, you can do a bunch of research online and maybe find some lists and different things like that or videos. But sometimes you just walk into a store because you're kind of interested in the game and you don't want to sit there and pull your phone out and try to, you know, do a bunch of Googling and you just want to ask a question.
Yeah, and again, well, I don't know about you, but like the last mm-hmm. like year or two, like reviews – online reviews seem to be like, not, I'm not talking about like the individual persons, but like Amazon reviews or Walmart or any like, those are so sketchy or just so like it's all one or five stars that you're like, I have no idea. I have no idea if this is going to be just the worst decision I ever made in my life or this is the best decision I ever made in my life.
And I don't know necessarily about game companies or publishers and things like that, but I know there's a lot in the tech world. There's a lot of like, hey, if you give us a five-star review on Amazon, we'll give you $10 off your next purchase and a lot of that kind of junk.
Right.
And so, yeah, so that with those types of reviews can be, well, but, you know, it's, I think that, yeah, it's also a good time to be able to ask a employee, owner, or whatever of a game store, like, hey, what's popular within board gaming that maybe I haven't heard of and stuff like that. I mean, mm-hmm. just being able to do those things quickly is really actually quite useful. And then, you know, also going, if you're going to go there and play, whether you're going to sit and play an RPG with a bunch of people, like you getting into a new group, or maybe you're playing board games or you're playing Magic or whatever, you know, the stores are going to, it makes a ton of sense. And I don't think I've come across a store in a while that hasn't had other revenue streams like snacks and soda. Like that's, if you're going to be there for a good while, you're going to want something to eat or drink. And sometimes they even go as far as to have like magazines and comics and stuff like that. Game cafes. So game cafes kind of seemed like they were a bit of the future for a while, didn't they?
Yeah, I kind of felt like, oh, yeah, if you don't have a game cafe, like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. But I think that COVID sort of messed with that pretty well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But even before COVID, I felt like I was hearing like, yeah, we tried it, but it was really good for like the first couple of months, and then slowly like the novelty I think wore off, and then
I think, you know, it's a ton of work, and you have to be a good sized store to make it, like, because like mm-hmm. you know, we're friends with John Caspian, who works at the Gigabytes Cafe down in Marietta, Georgia, and they're a massive store. It's like, I don't know, mm-hmm. 9 or 10,000 square foot store. So for them having a cafe attached as well makes total sense. And you get the same thing with, like, you know, if you look at Warhammer World over in Nottingham, where Games Workshop has mm-hmm. their big giant store and like play area. They also have Bugman's Pub or whatever it's called, where you can go in there, you get coffee and snacks, and I think even beer and stuff. And so, you know, there's people that are still doing it, but over the pandemic, if it was like, I feel like if it was a restaurant first that had a little bit of board gaming and stuff attached to it, yeah. I think that was a little bit harder. Having a store that's got snacks is great, but then mm-hmm. if you start going kind of a more high end or fancy snacks, then, you know, now you're having to keep not just inventory of games popular, but also, you know, inventory of food, and food will spoil before a board game will, you know, and there's all right. that. So yeah,
health and
yeah,
quality.
Maybe
and
that'll all come back to some degree over time. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But I think that was definitely a struggle via COVID. You know, a lot of stores definitely had, you know, had struggles with lockdown and COVID and things like that. But a lot of these stores kind of getting into the more like, well, what are the real, you know, more futuristic almost kind of things
mm-hmm.
that stores can do. And I don't know that this is necessarily futuristic. I mean, Lord knows the internet's been around for a while, but even stores concerning themselves with online sales, sometimes product sits on your shelf for a long time, and, you know, eventually you need to be able to throw it up on eBay or maybe try to sell it through your website. But curbside pickup, talking about COVID again, that's also a big deal. If someone can right. go to your website, buy a thing and say, I'll be by in an hour to pick it up or whatever, and you just, you know, there you go. A lot of stores were definitely kind of moving, the more popular ones, the more you know,
successful
yeah. is the word I was looking for, really. Yeah. The ones that were more successful were heading in that direction more. And yeah. I think it's
I like it, especially when there's more than one location. Like, it seems like, at least around here, we've got mm-hmm. ones that have, like, you know, two or three locations, especially yep. if they have some of those niche stuff that they just carry. Well, they've got like one of from 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
you know, being able to see that and be like, oh, the location across town that I don't normally go to because it's on the other side of town and it's not my closest one mm-hmm. has this, you know, that I was looking for
yeah.
or popular game that, oh, they sold all the copies here, but I can go get this one, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good way to compete with the online sellers is to be your own online seller, but with the benefit that a person can go and take a look through your inventory and be like, oh, geez, I can just go over and buy that now. You know what I mean? And pick mm-hmm. it up and have it. Because again, that kind of, you know, sort of quick, you know, impulse buy is still a big thing, specifically in gaming, you know, definitely. And so, yeah, I think that having, you know, online sales, curbside pickup, I know for some stores it's a bit of a hassle or a bit of a struggle to get that technology kind of figured out, but there are definitely companies out there that will work with you on those types of things. Maybe that's mm-hmm. part of your point of sale. You know, I know that one of our local stores is building their website with Square, which is their kind of like their register software that they're using.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yeah, there's a lot of different options there.
Oh yeah. Like one of ours just has like index cards. I mean, so they're yeah. very low tech.
So they're like loyal,
but
for their loyalty program. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, it works. So, I mean, you don't have to feel like, oh great, so you want me to go spend, you know, $10,000 on a new software system to go mm-hmm. do this thing. Well, that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's going to take too long and too much money to do. And then you'd be like, no, you could just start recording right then. Or maybe it's just a single purchase or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Other kind of things that have been talked about as the future of gaming stores for a while that we still don't really see too much, but we might. Print on demand. Like when print on demand first started getting popular in the late 90s, early 2000s, mm-hmm. there were a lot of store owners that are like, wait, so you're going to be able to sell a printed book to people directly online and you don't have to go through distribution and all that kind of stuff. And that is troublesome to store owners just to a degree.
Yeah.
It's because of the size of the company very frequently. Like, you know, me and Vince, our game is print on demand because we just don't want to carry. We're not big, so we can't carry like a big inventory and work with distribution and all that stuff. So print on demand works with us. But we have basically a simple form that people can fill out, and then they can buy copies at a discount to have in their store. You know, so we've mm-hmm. got like a retailer, you know, portal. But not everybody can do that. But the idea was for a while, well, what if we make some sort of print on demand machine where these books could get printed at mm-hmm. your local game store?
Right. Because printers are a pain in the butt. So if you buy the PDF and print it yourself, that's going to suck. Mm-hmm. Kinko's
and
all that
stuff. We've not seen it too much, unfortunately. Well, yeah. I mean, it might eventually if somebody makes like if Xerox or somebody makes a machine that could like literally print and bind like a book all internally and then mm-hmm. just spit it out. It would be awesome to be able to get a printed PDF a print on demand version, you know, working right. with one of the big print on demand companies. And instead of having to get it printed and shipped from wherever, just go pick it up at your local game store.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's be fine for the game store. I'm just saying like the actual individuals are not sure. going to ever pay for that or want to like learn how to use it and all that stuff. So that kind of thing mm-hmm. sounds way better. Like, especially like look at right now, like if you're in a different country than the company that's, you know, selling you the stuff, that the shipping sucks.
Oh,
it
yeah.
It costs absolutely. A lot, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even, yeah, like with us, you know, with our game, the facilities that print it are in the US and the UK. But if you're in Asia, you know, you're in whatever, Western Europe, Eastern Europe, I guess is what I meant to say. You know, yeah, it's a considerable shipping thing. But if it was simple enough that a company like One Bookshelf, which is the company that we go through for, you know, selling our stuff, Drive Through RPG, other companies like that are all in that same umbrella. If they had these machines that they could just start dropping into stores or the store could lease it or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then you just walk into the store and you're like, hey, I bought this book, print on demand book off of One Bookshelf and I'm getting it printed here. And then you're like, oh yeah, no, it started printing 20 minutes ago and it's ready to go. Boom. There you go. Like that'd be great, but we're not there technology wise yet, as it turns out. And I don't know if we will, because when the people were originally talking about this concept, I remember going to a seminar about this at Gen Con way back in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. there were no iPads yet. So yeah. Now there's a lot of folks out there that are like, well, I could get this printed, but I could also just look at it on my iPad, which I carry around anyway, and it's fine. Now, I will admit, I was very surprised how many people bought print versions of our game in comparison to the PDFs. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot. I was really surprised. There's a lot of people that did, but there's also a lot of people out there who are either like, I'll either print it myself or I'll just look at it on my iPad. I have a lot of stuff on my iPad because I just find it very convenient to be able to carry around 50 different rules books in one little thin thing. But so print on demand in stores, I don't know. We'll see. Now, that all being said, mm-hmm. there is a company called Bits and Mortar that's online, and they work with like 150 different publishers right now, something like that.
Holy cow.
So, so if you, it's the opposite way around. This is what happens. You go into your local game store and you buy a copy of, let's say, Cyberpunk Red.
Yep.
And then because our Talsorian is working with Bits and Mortar, there's some sort of a code you might get or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then you also get a free PDF of the book as well. So you can buy it not through mm-hmm. like directly online. You go into a store and you go, oh, this is cool. Oh, it's got a Bits and Mortar code in it. Cool. And you buy it, you take it home, you punch in the thing, and now you have the PDF version as well. And that's a cool thing.
Yeah, because I still like the physical book. But then if I'm like traveling, mm-hmm. I usually don't want to bring the physical book. So, you know, but and knowing, and I don't really want to buy it a second time.
Well, think about searchability too. Like there's times when like, yeah, the physical book is great, but I just want to do a control F search for, you know,
right.
this keyword or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, like what was that rule again? Yeah. Oh, that's on page 131. Okay. That's right. What that was. Yep.
Exactly. So yeah, that's I think a really cool thing. Bits and Mortar. I've heard of them in the past. And when I was doing research for this episode, I came across them again. And so that's, like I said, it's not some sort of machine that you pick up, you know, print on demand copies from. It's kind of the other way around. You bought this at a brick and mortar store.
Right.
Now you also get the PDF included, which is very cool.
Yeah. And they started doing that with movies for a while, like before it became common to stream. Was like,
Blu-ray and you got a digital version too.
You got the digital version too, which made me watch more of the digital versions. And I really liked that, especially, you know, when we were, you know, I knew I was going on a trip or something, like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can get this movie and watch the digital right away, and then I've got the Blu-ray at home when I want to watch it at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. 3D printing in-house at the game store.
Ooh.
I have been told that this does happen at some game stores. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Like, because you're the much more 3D printer person than me.
I think as time, like the speed and the quality improve, like, you know, it used to take, you know, like a day to print a miniature. Mm-hmm. Now with, like, you know, resin printers or some of the, you know, newer, even the FDM ones with the right settings and people testing stuff and tweaking settings and everything else, you can get stuff printed like 20 minutes. As that stuff becomes faster and faster, and now you're seeing like multicolors and everything else. I would find it shocking if that doesn't happen more often.
I mean, you know, that's the thing, is that like the store is like, yeah, but we want you to buy this physical product, but the barn door has been opened and STLs are out there and people are, and I'm not even talking about pirated STLs. I'm just being like people going to my mini factory and finding like a really cool thing that they've never seen a miniature for this ever in their life. You know what I mean?
Right.
And awesome, but I don't have a printer, but I really want this one miniature for my thing. If you could just go to your local shop and be like, hey, I have this thing on a thumb drive, or I'll email it to you and they print it and sell it to you. That's another revenue stream. Now,
think about, like, you know, I just saw they just announced the dates for Free RPG Days coming back. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, traditionally, like a Free RPG Day, you get like a couple of like RPGs and like
modules and stuff.
Yeah, maybe a six-sider or something. Mm-hmm. Now, what if you're like, you could choose one of these 10, you know, models, and you get that one. Each person gets one printed, and the store doesn't have to store up. Doesn't have to buy so many of each one. You know,
register for whatever that event is that has an included model, then you register ahead of time, and it's kind of like when you go to a wedding and you pick like what your meal is going to be ahead of time, you know, so you show up and they've already got, you know, your entire party. They're all printed out for everybody who's going to be playing with you. And then boom. And then you take that model home with you. I mean, that's great. The trick is that very probably either the store owner or somebody at the store is already going to have to be pretty heavy into 3D printing to have that facility set up and make it, you know, profitable at this day and age. But you're right. As these machines get easier and easier to use, because as it is right now, resin is probably, would you say that resin is easier to use than FDM?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's almost plug and play. It's easier than I think most regular printers are at this point.
Like paper printers.
I've had less issues with my resin printer than I have with my regular printer.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I know what you mean. So yeah, you know, as that gets even easier and it becomes simpler, it's going to be something that I think that game stores would be, again, game stores would, it would be another revenue stream for them, and they would be leaving money on the table to some degree if they have the you know, the person power to be able to like run that machine or whatever the deal is.
Well, we were just talking about like niche games and stuff like that. And then all the high quality, like, you know, miniatures that are coming out. It's like, I used to buy, like, whenever I saw a cool miniature, I would buy it. Mm-hmm. Now I can't do that because there's more cool looking miniatures than I have money for.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Oh yeah. No, so, I mean, just like STLs, you mean, or you mean?
Yeah. STLs. Yeah. So,
oh yeah.
You know, being able to, you know, just have those on demand and not take up store space. Like, they don't have to go, you know, if your game, like your miniatures game, doesn't take up a whole half aisle and it's just files that people can print, you know, saving store space and basically square footage space makes the profit margin needed less, you know?
Well, look, as an example, look at one-page rules. So one-page rules, for those of you who haven't heard of it, is a company that makes a bunch of different PDFs and whatnot of games that are, they're not knockoffs exactly of like Warhammer-style games, but they are designed to be a different kind of simpler rule set that you could play with your current Warhammer models. So if Age of Sigmar is too much for you, well, they've got Age of Fantasy, and then you can download that, whatever. But they're also now making STLs, and they're selling those as well. So if you don't have models, well, here's a bunch of STL models. So think about how nice it would be to be able to just go into your local store and say, I want a printed copy of the most recent version of, you know, Age of Fantasy, and I want these 12 models from their line. And they go, okay, it's going to cost this much. And you're like, cool. And whether you did it online and then went to pick it up, or whether you did it and then came back and picked it up, like whatever, like that kind of thing, that kind, and there's like literally no inventory sitting there. So it's not taking up tons of space, but you're still able to, as the store owner, get benefit from a person buying this kind of niche game, but you didn't have to keep it on the shelves and have it take up your space. I mean, that kind of thing. That's like the future that I would love to see for gaming stores. Because sure, if I have a printer and I have a 3D printer and all that kind of stuff, I could do the same thing here at home. But there's a benefit, I think, to not having to necessarily personally have that stuff, you know? If I don't have to have an actual paper printer in my house. Yeah, exactly. I would love to get rid of every paper printer in my house.
Well, and we're all, you know, for me, doing a lot of 3D printing, I'm already chasing the dragon of like, oh, now I can get 8K resolution.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
Stuff like that. Like, oh, so it's like, so you can get nicer stuff, better material. Yeah,
because as a store, you could sell the 4K printer to somebody who's interested in buying it used, and then buy the 8K printer, you know, that kind of thing, and then have a better, you know, product that you could sell to your people.
Or they, or they just use it for older STLs or smaller STLs, or they charge different prices for, you know, the quality, you know.
Yeah.
And also think, you know, one of the things when they started doing the whole legacy games was like, oh, by the time you're done, you've kind of have customized the game for yourself.
Like, sure, like Risk Legacy and stuff like that.
Yeah, right from day one, like, oh, all of a sudden, you know, my character, I got to choose some of the stuff that's in my game for components.
So I have
a custom game right from the start.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Like that kind of stuff, I think I definitely could see happening, you know, in the future at your local game store to get you, you know, because again, yeah, sure, you could do all this at home. You could print your own game, or you could keep it on your iPad. You could print your own miniatures and all that stuff. But then you got to have an iPad or paper printer or 3D printer and all that kind of stuff. And we know just from, you know, dealing with a lot of gamers that there's more and more of people getting that stuff every day, but it's still a very small percentage of the overall gaming audience. And it is still a pain, you know, to work with to some degree.
A lot of the 3D printers remind me kind of like exercise equipment. Like everybody buys them with very good intentions.
Sure, but you just hang your clothes on them?
95% of them are just expensive coat hangers, or they get resold to somebody else.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that type of stuff I think is definitely something that that your stores in the future are going to probably start thinking about, your ones that are a little bit more, I think, proactive. Crowdfunding product, you know, like there's a lot of different, you know, Kickstarters and things like that out there that have retail levels and stores, and it doesn't work with obviously everything, but I think a lot of stores are starting to pay more attention to those retail things because then they know that they can sell those.
Especially, you know, the hot games. Yeah. The games that you're like, oh, this got funded in like 30 seconds. Especially like the ones that are like you're like, okay, that company didn't need to kickstart that.
Right, exactly. They're a big enough company, they could have just sold it, but they did it this way and da da da.
But at the same time, the deal that you're getting, because they're going to hold your money for a year and the not a stretch goals, like that sounds really nice, but I don't have the money to do it right now because I just found out about it and there's only 10 days left.
Yeah.
Shoot, I'm going to have to miss this because I can't afford it right now. But if I know that my friendly local game store is most likely going to get copies of this that I can then reserve.
Yeah,
that's different.
We've got a local game store that's done that quite frequently. They've picked up like retailer levels of Kickstarter stuff, knowing that they've got people, you know, between their two stores that are definitely going to be interested in it. And it's, you know, the benefit for the store is that you get to sell that stuff before it goes to full blown retail in many situations.
Right.
Now, admittedly, there are times when, you know, the game comes out at retail at the exact same time that it actually gets into Kickstarter or backers' hands. And that's not ideal, obviously, because Kickstarter, or sometimes even it hits retail.
It's half the reverse,
yeah, exactly. And Kickstarter backers get angry about that. But, you know, that's that's more the company's problem, not you know, the, so
right,
there's
usually there's a stretch goals or early bird rewards and stuff like that usually help make up for that. So
yeah absolutely. And then other things that the gaming stores I think in the future need to like really kind of grab onto, Discord or some other kind of like non-Facebook communication. I mean, there's plenty of companies out there, there's plenty of like game stores that have got a Facebook page, obviously, but you know, Facebook's got its issues. And
let my friendly local game store, like the fact that I can, they finally are responding to their email, is so nice. Because I don't know, I hate calling stores. I just despise it. I don't know. There's as I get older or less used to calling people, I don't like calling.
I think that generally people don't like calling as much as they used to on the phone. You know what I mean? Like if you're going to sit and talk to a family member or a friend, you know, calling on the phone or even calling on some other kind of audio internet thing, Discord, chat, whatever, Google chat, whatever, that's fine. People still like audio. Obviously, you're listening to a podcast right now. That's great. But to like call and bug somebody, even though it's a customer, like you're a customer in their store, and but you know, like it'd be easier sometimes just to be able to text or send a message or whatever and be like, hey, do you guys have this in stock, or when are you getting this, or whatever.
Well, versus, I feel like, I feel horrible just calling them up, like, you know, because, you know, right now store hours are crazy because, you know, staffing levels and holidays and pandemic and 5,000 reasons why their Google, you know, their posted hours might be different. But calling just feels like they're going to have to like probably break away from a customer to go answer the phone for me to go, hey, what time do you guys close tonight?
Exactly.
If I could just like throw it onto like Facebook Messenger or something, or, you know, that somebody else could be like, oh, hey, they just said that they're open till 10 tonight. Or,
well, sure. If you've got, if your store's got a Discord and the person knows about it and they're whatever, that, you know, somebody else in the Discord might even be like, oh, yeah, normally they're open till 10, but tonight they're open till 11 because there's a new expansion,
right?
For
like
Magic or whatever.
Yeah. Like, oh, are they, do you know if they're doing the new Magic opening tonight? Like, yep, they're there. I'm there right now. Like, yeah, there's still three spots left open, you know, like,
That kind of stuff. Getting that kind of stuff going, I think, is super important.
Well, and being able to do it from work too, right? Like if you're in an office and having to call on the phone, you know, or not even in the office, if you're, you know, maybe you work, you know, on construction or something else, but, you know, texting on a break is a lot easier, or, you know, typing it up and you can get the response back. It's
Absolutely. I think one of the last kind of, and again, I'm saying futuristic here, but think of it in air quotes, if you would, because there are actually some places that are already doing this, but live streaming capabilities.
Okay.
You know, like being able to, your store and your streaming games on Twitch, whatever they might be, it might be unboxings of new games that have come out. And then other times you stream and you're showing a demo of a new game, or maybe me and a friend come into the store and they're like, hey, do you guys want to play your miniatures game on the live stream? And, you know, we'll interact with people and stuff like that. Yeah. Like being able to have that kind of setup. I mean, obviously it takes a little bit of work.
Classes would be nice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a like, point too, you know, there's times when I'm like, oh, that'd be really good. But, oh, they're doing the paint and take on Tuesday night. But if I could be like, go in and like pay $10 to get the kit ahead of time and then take it home and then I can watch the stream back. I wouldn't get the interactivity, or maybe I can watch it, interactively, but I'm just at home, so I can still ask questions.
Take care of your children, or you're not feeling well, or whatever the deal is. Yeah, there's lots of reasons.
Or like, there's a bad snowstorm coming in. We don't have to cancel the event. We're just going to do it virtually.
Yeah, yeah. Or you're not feeling well, and you've decided to stay home and not, you know, that's also nice. Yeah, that's more people should do that sometimes. Anyway, but the live streaming stuff, like it takes a little bit of work, but there are, you are seeing more and more companies that are starting to make devices. I bought a device about a month ago or whatever that is like basically like a big Android tablet, but you can plug like three different HDMI things into it and a webcam and all kinds of stuff. And you can stream from it and all this jazz. And it doesn't take like an entire dedicated PC and a bunch of other stuff. And so that kind of thing, like having stores that have are trying to expand their online presence, just both to let people in their local area know that they're out there, but also to get other people involved. And then if you're a store, like I said before, that's also doing some online sales and selling stuff, I mean, that's also a benefit as well. So creating content like that, whether it's live streaming, the live streaming, I think, is probably the easiest because once you're done, you're done. There's no,
right.
Like when we do get done with this podcast, I got to edit it and do all that stuff. When I get done making a video, I got to sit down and then I edit it and upload it and go through all that stuff. When I get done with a live stream, I turn off all the lights and I go upstairs and I talk to my wife and whatever. It's like, it's ready to go. And so it's the same type of thing. You don't have that back end. I got to do a bunch of work now on top of
right. Cause yeah, the bar is a little bit lower and now with the devices being a little bit high, like, I mean, if you're 10 years ago, if you were live streaming, probably it would look horrible and your voice would sound horrible. Now you can usually do a pretty good job to meet people's expectations.
Absolutely, yeah. You can do a pretty easy, without too much work, you can get decent audio, you can have decent light, you can have decent, you know, it's maybe not 4K, but it's generally at least HD, you know, 1080, that kind of stuff. So, you know, the trick is that, yeah, it's easy for, it's easy to buy games online. As a consumer, it's real simple to just go, oh, let's go on whatever, Amazon or whatever, boop, 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 done, okay, great. And some publishers do seem to either prefer to work direct with consumers. You're starting to see more publishers are starting to head in that direction where they're just like, oh, why don't we just sell direct to these consumers? And that's a kind of a bummer. But sometimes they're also small enough that they have to. Like that was the situation, you know, like I said, with us and our game is that we're selling direct to consumers. But again, we're also trying to get stores involved as well. So stores, therefore, really need to be, they need some very specific benefits to bring people into their location. And you know, like the stuff that we've mentioned above, some of it being a little bit more just organizational and cleanliness and having stuff in stock. And then other things are slightly more futuristic, like print on demand and 3D printing in-house and all that stuff. But these are the things that your tabletop, your friendly local game store is going to have to probably think about very much if they want to be around in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for listening to this episode of the Game 4 podcast. If you've got questions or comments and you're watching on YouTube, please leave a comment below. If you're listening via your favorite podcast player or just aren't into the whole YouTube comment section thing, then you can feel free to reach out to us via email at podcast@iamgame4.com. You can also keep up to date with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and check out our website at www.iamgame4.com. See, the first one I did just right. The second one I'm screwing up. That is www.iamgame4.com. Thanks.